Hello and welcome to the Personal Investor Podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, what do you tell people who are entering middle age without anything by way of savings for their retirement? Many people are in exactly that position, and today we'll show them how you can save £100,000 from nothing, even if you're several decades into your career. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. What do you do if you're heading for retirement, but the money you've saved isn't enough to give you the retirement income that you want? And worse than that, what do you do if you don't have anything saved for retirement? Those scenarios are all too common, and they're made worse by the apparent stigma that exists in admitting that you've neglected your retirement savings. What can you do if you need to play catch-up, and how much difference can you really make, even if you're several decades into your working life and you have nothing saved? To help answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. This topic today, I guess, is going to be aimed at people who have neglected their savings, as we say. And it does occur to me that the listeners of the podcast probably aren't those people, are they? The fact that they're listening to an investing podcast. But they may well have people in their lives, their children, partners, family, friends, I certainly do, that could do with some encouragement. And I hope that some of this is going to act as a reminder of the big differences that you can make by increasing your retirement savings, even if you are sort of broadly speaking on track. I think it will still be useful. So that said, do you agree, Tom, that there can be some shame attached to admitting that you haven't saved enough for retirement?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I am the perfect person to talk to about this topic, actually, because I was that person. I was that person in my mid-40s who suddenly, you know, realised that I had not, put enough money aside. I'd not really thought about it. I had a million other things to think about. I had three children. I was thinking about schools. I was thinking about mortgages. I'd fallen between the gap of, my parents' generation with final salary pensions. That was not the case. In fact, where I came from, as you know well, where I came from in journalism, it wasn't just a case of there not being a final salary pension. There was no pension at all. So it was quite easy to get to 45, actually, and not to have put enough aside.
Well, yeah, I think you and I are sort of, in this sense, we're in the same generation, I would say, because, again, as you say, too young to get like the really generous final salary schemes. They exist in the public sector, but basically nowhere else now. I think that's fair to say. But also, in my case at least, I'm sort of too old to have got all the benefit from auto enrollment. So that was the policy. I think it started in 2012, that basically enrolled many employees, not all, but many employees into pension schemes. And that's going to really help younger people who have just sort of, without doing anything themselves, they've been pension saving from early in their career, and it makes a huge difference to do that. So it's us in the middle that kind of can fall between those two sorts.
And it is worth just making the point on that we haven't yet seen the consequences of that. Because I'm right at the top end of that, sort of coming to the end of my working life, but you are not. You are still right in the middle of your working career. So most of the people who've fallen foul of this gap in the middle, if you like, it's disguised because they're still working.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. And it's almost like they, I'll come on and we'll talk about it. I mean, this whole topic really is born out of something I've written this week, which is about people who are in their 40s and they haven't saved enough for retirement. And it is quite close to home for me, not for me personally, but lots of my friends are in that sort of position, maybe not quite that bad, but certainly they haven't saved enough. And these are people who are, high earning often. They've got good careers. Everything else in their financial life is sort of ticking along very well. They've bought the house, they're doing all those things that are very difficult to do, but they've achieved them. Saving retirement is one of the things that just they've quietly forgotten about because it just falls down the list of priorities, doesn't it? Because you say you've got to save for a house, you've got kids that come along, weddings, big ticket things to pay for.
And the payoff for all of those is much quicker, of course. I mean, that's the thing about saving for retirement. It's a long way in the future, whereas, you know, saving for a house, you know, well, I've got 5 years to get that deposit together. That's, it concentrates the mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And we obviously work in an industry which is in the business of encouraging people to prioritise that retirement savings. But we don't, as an industry, always get it right, do we? I mean, I think this is changing, but so much of the messaging from the savings and investing industry is essentially a warning that, you know, you're going to be incredibly poor in retirement. You've got to save, you've got to save. Time is of the essence. You've got to get going now. You should have been doing it since you were 25 or earlier. And that isn't the most inspiring message. If you are in this position of actually several decades older than that, you still haven't done it, you think, oh my God, you know, how bad is it going to be for me when I hear how difficult it is in general to do this?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, the best time to do all of these things, you know, buying a house or whatever, was always 20 years ago. And as you say, that is really unhelpful for someone to remind you of that fact, because the one thing we can't do is turn the clock back.
No, so we're going to buck that trend, Tom, and we're going to run some numbers on the difference that you can make, even if you are going from that standing start. And I think show that you can make that difference without unrealistic sacrifices, because obviously saving for retirement means that you have to put money aside and you can't spend it now. So I did this in my article. People can find that at fidelity.co.uk/markets and insights. I think that's what we call these days. But to lay out some numbers. Okay, so we wanted to show how someone aged 45 with nothing saved could build £100,000 of savings by the time they hit retirement. So someone like that is going to get their state pension from age 68. So that's the age we're picking for them to retire. So that gives them 23 years of working life ahead of them, believe it or not. So quite a long time still. The current average pay I found for someone aged between 40 and 49 is just over £40,000 a year, £40,040 a year. So that's where we've started, and we're going to assume that their pay increases by 3% a year. All quite vanilla assumptions, you would think. So based on all of that, starting from absolutely nothing, they could contribute just £147 a month. And then they increase that each year in line with their earnings. So if their earnings goes up 3%, that 147 goes up 3% as well. And if they do that for all those years until they retire and hit their state pension age, they're going to have built a pot of £100,397, just over £100,000 figure, basically. To do that, they need a 5% return after all fees, and of course, that's completely illustrative. Their returns won't be guaranteed. They can go down as well as up. You know the warnings, Tom. So first of all, based on that, £147 a month to get to £100,000, worth having.
Yeah, and it's not nothing, £147 a month, when, you know, as you say, you are probably also paying, you know, quite a lot out on a mortgage, probably. You know, you've got you may well have a family to be looking after as well. So it's not nothing. But if you are earning £40,000 a year, then £147 a month is certainly well within your grasp. And and you end up with, you know, a sizable amount of money after, you know, okay, it's 23 years. Again, it's not nothing. You haven't to do that for quite a long time, but it is achievable.
And that £100,000 figure, by the way, I was looking at this, not in my recent article, but just before we came in to record today, I was looking at the average levels of pension savings. And these are kind of, these figures need explaining, so they're a bit crude. But for that age group, I think from 50 to retirement age, the average level of pension savings is about £107,000. So this almost gets you to the kind of average level, basically. And these are people who might have assumed that they're way behind on their pension savings. And if we dwell on that £147 a month, look, that's the total that gets paid into a pension. If you've got an employer paying in on your behalf as well, which many people will do, especially with auto-enrollment these days, they're going to pay some of that £147. Also, tax relief. means that you can pay £147 into a pension, but the cost to you is much less. These people in this scenario are basic rates taxpayers. It's only going to cost them £117.60, in fact, a month from their take-home salary. Now, again, that's money you've got to do without, but I would strongly guess that for most of us, you could run through your annual spending or your monthly spending and find a whole load of things that you can cut out that means you wouldn't even need to make a sacrifice. You know, how many subscriptions do you not use? You know, could you just go for a cheaper version of, you know, the weekly shop or whatever? All these things that are covered well in sort of budgeting kind of guidance. You can save those kind of amounts.
Yeah, I think your point is well made. I mean, I don't, you know, for most people at that stage in their life with a job, saving that kind of money is something that, you know, there's no excuse really not to do it. We can all do it. It's a choice if we decide not to do it, but you know, the outcome is worth it.
Indeed. And a couple of important points to make about that whole scenario, which is that you could easily build much larger amounts if you tweak some of the variables that we've spoken about. I realise we'll run through the details quite quickly, but we've assumed 5% growth. You might get more than that. You might get less, but you might get more than that. A lot of us would build our financial plans on getting a slightly more than 5% return. That's going to greatly improve that final figure that you end up with. You could clearly increase your contributions by more. So, you know, the example we've used, it works out that they're paying in about 4.4% of their overall salary. That isn't actually all that much. You could tweak that a little bit higher. You could escalate it in a gradual way so that perhaps when you get a pay rise, you know, not only will your contribution increase simply by the percentage of that pay rise, you could decide to put a higher percentage of your salary in. So if you're paying in 4.4, maybe you're going to pay in 5.4 next year, and then 6.4 the year after that. You can time those increases with pay rises so it doesn't seem quite as bad. And that has a really dramatic effect on what you've got saved. So,
and I think the one that really jumps out that there is, you know, I think the 5% growth rate is, you know, is a reasonable assumption, and you probably wouldn't want to count on getting more than that. I mean, yes, you know, historically, you know, the stock market probably has delivered more than that, but I think it's a reasonable assumption. The one that jumped out at me though was that 4.4%, because, you know, that is a very low savings rate, really. And you know, so if you were to save 10% of your income, which is not unrealistic, you know, then that's nearly 2.5 times that. Suddenly 100,000 becomes 250,000 just on the basis of that. So there is quite a bit of flex in here.
Absolutely. And of course, if, you know, we based our numbers on sort of average earnings, but if you were a higher rate taxpayer, the relative costs of making those pension contributions is low. You still got to put the money in, but because of tax relief being higher for higher earners, the hit is going to be sort of relatively even more advantageous to you. So, you know, that's the savings part of this. You can get to that kind of big-ish number. But what difference does it actually make in retirement? Well, this is the second part of what I wrote this week. And we try to put some numbers on how much income and cash that's going to mean in retirement. So an important thing to say is that if it's paid into a pension, under current rules, 25% of it typically is available tax-free, completely tax-free. There's a limit on that, but for most people, it's going to be 25%. You can turn it into income in a variety of ways. You know this, Tom. It could be an annuity, which is an insurance product that basically takes your money off you and gives you a return, an income in return. Or you can use drawdown, which is leaving money invested. You get your income, but you hang on to the ownership of that pension pot should you need the money. So based on a couple of those examples, for a healthy 68-year-old, which is what these people would be, an annuity, the numbers I could find, an annuity is going to pay you between 5% and 6% of your fund, basically. But you typically buy an annuity after you've taken 25% of your tax-free cash. So in that scenario, your 100 grand is going to get you just over £25,000 of tax-free cash. Great. You can do with that what you will, but you could use it for income if you wanted. And then it's going to give you an income somewhere between 3,800 and 4,500 a year.
Mm.
So,
and that's the wake up call, isn't it? Really, I mean, you know, yeah, I know that we are endeavouring to be relentlessly upbeat about the, you know, the opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
But that for me is quite a stark figure. You know, £100,000, which sounds like a reasonable sum of money, buys you, you know, a relatively small amount of income. Now, it's not the only source of income you're likely to have, so that's worth making a point. But it does, people listening to this will not need this to be emphasized for them, but it does emphasize the importance of doing this, because, you know, even with a significant lump sum, you're not going to generate a huge amount of income with it.
Yeah, which underlines the importance of those other things we said about escalating, you know, tax relief, employee contributions, all these things that you can do. It's death by a thousand cuts is the wrong phrase. The opposite of that. It's the incremental gains, isn't it? That's what you want to do with pension savings. Start a little bit earlier, a little bit more over time, gradually ratcheting up, maximizing, you know, allowances, maximizing employee contributions. Then you get to the bigger numbers that you need, which for many people, really, to meet expectations, might be actually several hundred thousand pounds.
Yeah, and you mentioned right at the outset that, you know, maybe some people listen to this, it won't affect them, but they will have family, you know, who will be affected by this. And I think that, you know, the variable that I don't think you've addressed here, and it's an important one, but you've alluded to it, is time. You know, that actually, so we're talking about a 45-year-old. If you actually started this process at 40, what a difference that makes. And that's so that is a huge bit of flex in here that people need to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely right. And on that point about these being quite sort of measly sums of income, right? I totally get that. That's always the thing that I think does shock people around the pension savings. They've got a pension pot number, which looks big, but then the extra income can be quite discouraging, actually, when they see how little difference that's going to make. But I'm going to beg to differ there, because that extra income, you'll be really pleased you have it. If you'll be very, very pleased, because if that's your only income, or beyond that, the state pension is your only income, that's a significant uplift on what the state pension is. And if you consider that a state pension, it's not going to afford anybody a life of luxury. It's going to be there for the absolute essentials in life. Anything that you can save for yourself, that's what gives you quality of life, or some semblance, a few hundred quid a month to have some quality of life. It's going to make a huge difference. We're not in the sort of aspirational lifestyle territory here, but it just might be the difference between going out once or twice a month for a bite to eat or traveling to see family. I mean, that is what makes life worthwhile, and you know, this is the difference it makes. And as we've said, you should be encouraged to save more than this.
Yeah, and I don't want to be discouraging, because I think, you know, we've talked about all these areas where you can flex things to your advantage. You know, if you do save at, you know, at 10% and not 4.4%, if you do it, you know, a couple of years earlier, if you start at 40 instead of 45, suddenly, you know, you're doubling your state pension. You know, you're not just incrementally improving it. You're doubling it, and that is very significant.
Yeah, okay. Well, I hope, Tom, that we've covered enough there to give people encouragement, even if it doesn't apply to them, then perhaps some of the other people in their life that might benefit from the advice. I think that is all the time we have for now. Thanks for joining me, Tom.
Thanks, Ed.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorised financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation.